This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Gabby Barr, and I am joined by Mr. Greg Crumpton. Greg, how are you doing today?
I am suddenly highly caffeinated due to our pre-recording conversation with our guest. So excited today. This guy, I just found out from him, and I we're coming up on 10 years of friendship and electronic geeking together. And he's the real deal. I'm a wannabe. He knows so much more about it than I do. I'm fascinated with everything he does. He's got a lot of stuff going on, which we'll talk about some of it. We don't have all day, but a lot of cool stuff. So why don't you kick us off? Tell us who he is, and then we're going to hear from the man himself.
Absolutely. Well, I am excited to introduce Bill Clayman. He is the CEO of Neuro, and he also works with AFCOM Data Center World. He is a program contributing editor, data center knowledge, and data center frontier. Bill, how are you doing today?
I am doing so well, Gabrielle and Greg. It's great to be on here. For all the audience to know about this, this podcast was in the planning for what, like, I think 6 months, if I'm not mistaken. I think you and I met, Greg, at a conference recently, and you're like, hey, Bill, we should get you on the podcast. And I'm like, yeah, sure, thinking it's going to be like in a week or two. No, this guy's schedule is so booked up in podcasts that if any industry celebrity wants to get on this little platform, you're going to have to wait. Oh, there's a line. So I'm doing well. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here, I should just say.
Well, thank you for that. We're glad. I think that really says how cheap I am, that I can't afford more producer help more than once a week. So we are definitely glad you're here, Bill. I forgot where we were when we saw each other. Oh, in D.C., I think it was. I don't remember. Somewhere.
It was a big conference hall. We had just finished listening to an event. I remember our conversation very well. It was serious like 5 or 6 months ago, at the very least, one of the very many. In my door, I know you all can't see. This is one of those podcasts where I wish I could grab a camera and go totally like YouTuber mode. In my closet right over there, I have a Christmas tree of badges, like my honor badges, like medals of all the conferences that I've been to since day one. And I'm pretty sure that hook is starting to get a little strained from all the weight of those badges.
I wish I would have done that. People like you are so much smarter than I am, because I'm such a non-clutter guy. Like, I'll throw them away at the airport on the way out of town because I'm that stupid. Now, if I had any sense, I would have done it from the get-go. I'd have 41 years worth. Do you believe that? This is my 41st year of doing this stuff. Crazy, I know. 30-year-old guys, hard to pull that off, you know?
I mean, the conference circuit keeps you young, Greg, clearly.
Gabby gave you such an introduction that I'm green with envy just because of how many words are in your introduction. But what do you do, man? I mean, you have a lot of stuff. What is the core of your existence other than your wife whipping you around the house?
my wife and my five-year-old. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast. And what's really great is, you know, behind the scenes, everybody listening, I know when we're recording this and I know when this is going to be released. And what's fascinating about that is that you're going to be hearing some really fun announcements as we're going to be releasing this podcast and this conversation. I know, Gabrielle, you were kind enough to call me the CEO of Neuro. Now, hang on a second. You might be like, wait, what is Neuro? That company name may have changed. And it might have changed at this point, but I'm still going to be the CEO of it. I want to make sure that you and I have time for a conversation. I think like even a biography on me at this point is going to take up like half this chat. I'm really fortunate. What is the driving factor in the core of Bill Clayman? If you ever take a look at the term extrovert in a dictionary, you'll see this face. And you know, you all give me energy, right? The industry gives me energy. I'm very lucky, Greg, and everybody listening. I'm a native to this industry, the data center space, the IT and technology space, where I've asked this question many, many times, like how many people meant to be in the data center industry? Like you graduated with a degree or you weren't adopted. It's usually like one or two people, me, who raises their hand very sheepishly and is like, I'm not a former musician or a pediatrician or a marketing professional. Like I graduated with a network engineering degree and then afterwards got a master's in business and another master's in information security. But right off the bat, when I got my network engineering degree, I went to a trade school. There's no sugarcoating it. Went to a trade school, went to DeVry. I was 21 years old with a network engineering degree, which in parallel I got with my Cisco certified network admin degree certification, a CCNA. And I was literally racking and stacking and working in the data center space before I even realized they were called data centers. You know, like, I mean, full racks, you know, containment, putting Cisco stuff in there. And like, oh, I guess this is what data centers are all about. So I've been doing that for 19 years. And yes, despite me being a millennial, I'm so fortunate to be in this industry for a long time. And over the course of those years, I've had a chance to work at the nation's largest Citrix partner. It was the largest Platinum partner at the time. I've worked with end users. I've worked with one of the world's largest DevOps development application migration cloud organization called EPAM Systems. I had an amazing opportunity to work at Switch Data Centers, where I started off with the company. They were $4.5 billion publicly traded. You know, I was a part of the team that helped them grow. And ultimately, we helped them sell for $11 billion in December. And remarkably, January of 23 is when I said, you guys keep doing amazing things. I'm going to do a couple of things of my own. And that's when I joined an amazing organization called Neuro. And at a very, very high level, again, you could probably still go to that website, neu.ro. It might point you to a different name or a different company, which is really weird because we're talking about this now, but we're going to hear about this in the future as well. We entered this market back in 2019. There's an extraordinary story behind it, but right now we are in the United States and we are the only platform in this entire industry, but interoperability platform, where we are basically the garage that helps you build any kind of AI infrastructure you can possibly imagine. So we go into data center facilities. If you have any excess capacity, we put ourselves right on top and say within 5 days, you can compete with Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and literally become an AI company. But here's the cool part. You put your name on there, you put your logo on there, and it becomes a part of your organization. Now, there's no other platform in the industry right now that can enable both multi-tenancy and self-service. So literally, you could put a couple of GPUs in there and sell it to the market with your own platform, your own portal payment system and everything. We're definitely trying to use this market by storm because it's a hungry space. And I'm missing a whole bunch of really fun pieces on there. I'm originally from Kyiv, Ukraine, came to the United States in the early 90s and continue to support, you know, my friends and family out there. Just get a chance to work with this industry, which is a lot of fun and never stopping.
I've told you he was wide open and he is. What I really admire about Bill is his ability to, and this is a gift because a lot of people that are really skilled in a technical fashion aren't necessarily as skilled in the human side, the EQ portion. And I think Bill brings a super duper balance to that because he knows all about that, as we just heard, and even some before we started recording, of how into the space he is technology wise. But as you see, it transfers over to people. You know, he connects with people just as well. So it's just a cool mix of a human. So thank you for that, sir. So this is kind of fun being able to talk into the future a little bit because we know when this was going to be released and things may change. But what have you done recently in a technology way or had vision to or got to play with that was really cool? What have you been into?
We've been heavily into the AI space. And what's fascinating about this, you know, the straight out of Crumpton conversation, this podcast, is that I am going to talk to the future here for a second. There's one of my mentors, his name is Peter Gross. You may have heard me say this a million billion times, and I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to challenge this statement because it's a very dangerous statement in a way, but the data center industry loves innovation as long as it's 10 years old. Kind of a dangerous statement to make, right? And so when we start to take a look at this idea and concept of the data center industry loves innovation as long as it's 10 years old, we realize that we are in this position where we are right now, where the hyperscalers, these large cloud organizations are winning this AI race, right? Let me answer your question, some of the stuff that I've been getting a chance to work on. Over the past year, I've had this extraordinary opportunity to work with data centers and to modernize them, right? We're literally talking about, okay, we as an industry have been operating at 8, 9, 10 kilowatts per rack for a long time, and it's been fine and solid. Now, all of a sudden, you've got these AI companies and workloads, forget companies for a second, the customers that are saying, cool, 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 can you manage this level of density, which now is like 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 kilowatts per rack, and it's like, whoa, these are massive increments. So one of the most fascinating things that I think we've been working on is the evolution of things like liquid cooling. We've worked now with several data center partners where we've helped them evolve from traditional rack and stack style of compute to working with rear door heat exchangers, directed chip liquid cooling, where they've gone from 10, 15, 20 kW to 60, 70 kilowatts per rack, now capable of handling some of the most high density NVIDIA GPU intense kind of workload and architectures out there. And what's been most fascinating are the conversations that we've been having with the end users, the customers. What we've noticed that we haven't been driven by the data centers necessarily, we've been driven by their customer base. They don't want to be ultimately an Amazon. They want data locality and control. They don't want their information to be used to train some big foundational model. And they want cost control as well. So they've been going to data center partners and saying, do you have anything for us? And the typical response from our community has been, this doesn't look like traditional compute to me. I don't have this. So we have a market that's been driven to move in an industry that's not necessarily ready to pivot to that. Now, we don't have 10 years. We don't have 10 months. When the foundation of the internet began, it was the hyperscalers that helped mold and craft that. Whereas we in the data center space were relegated with, you know, Exchange servers, SQL databases, VMware, and Citrix workloads. And the same thing started happening with artificial intelligence. Beyond anything else, generative AI, right? And so all of a sudden, these big hyperscalers are molding the way once again. Amazon, Azure, GCP are the ones that you got to come here and do all your work with us. Whereas again, the data center was left a little bit behind. Well, we're not doing that anymore. My past year, and even into the release of this podcast, has been working with data centers, both very, very large, as well as very small, to help them democratize and capture this market. That's been a tremendous amount of fun, educating this industry on the types of software tools that you need, how you can revolutionize your infrastructure to support higher density workloads, what that even looks like, how to ascertain this kind of architecture, and most of all, the fact that this is going to be released sometime in the near future. NVIDIA, as of this recording, has about 70% of the market in terms of GPUs. You better believe they're not the only horse in this race. And we've been having really fun conversations with AMD and Intel as well. They're going to be impacting it. So very long-winded answer here. My past year has been an extraordinary exploration into the evolution and innovation of the data center industry to help them increase their capacity and ultimately handle and support some of the most advanced artificial intelligence, generative AI, large language model workloads that are in this industry, and none of it's slowing down.
You brought up several points of which I have really particular interest. I think about existing space and as many millions of square feet that we have that are operating at, you know, 8, 10, 12 kW. We have these hyperscalers that are, they have the resources to go and totally, you know, retool at a whim. My thought and question is kind of twofold. What happens to, you know, a legacy 20,000 square foot colo facility, and how do we adapt because of density, because these spaces weren't built either electrically nor mechanically to support that? So I think about how do we retool, you know, and I've got, I don't know, 100 in my head that I can name off of physical spaces that I know the infrastructure well, and they simply can't do it. So that piece, and then when you're out and about and people are so people-centric, they want to work with people. They don't want to work with an acronym. They don't want to work with AWS as an acronym. They want to work with Bill. How do you, and I know this is kind of jumping all over the place, which I normally do, but how does the people side interact, blend with explaining the new data center coupled with what do we do with the old data center? If you can make heads or tails of that, good luck. But
I try to take down your multiple threads of thought here, and we'll see what I did as far as note-taking here from Greg Crumpton's stream of thought. So it's important to note, and this is something that we're seeing, every data center is going to become an AI data center, ultimately. It all depends on how quickly you can get there. Over the course of the next 5 years, large language model-based applications are going to be as dominant as your very own traditional web applications that you go to right now, right? They're going to have some kind of a large language model backing it. What I want everyone on this phone call to understand, and yeah, we're throwing out some really fun acronyms. Yeah, we're having these really crazy, cool discussions around the future. And yeah, it's all cool. What we're talking about isn't an innovation in technology. We're not talking about, you know, obviously we're going to mention GPUs and, you know, data center architecture. And I promise I'll answer your question, legacy to modern. But what I want everyone in this phone call to pause really quick right now, get off your Amazon shopping list or whatever you're doing, and understand that we're experiencing right now is not a technological shift. It's a shift in humanity, right? How you and I and everybody listening to this extraordinary podcast straight out of Crumpton works with data. For the past 20 to 25 years, all of you, every single one of you has been conditioned to search for data in a certain type of manner. Let me give you an example. So Greg Crumpton, right, is going to go to his favorite search engine, Ask Jeeves, maybe Yahoo, and if he's feeling feisty on a Monday morning, maybe even Google, who knows? But he's going to type in his favorite question, right? He's going to type in his question, and he's going to get a blue link. That blue link is how we've been conditioned to look at data for the past 20 to 25 years, right? And God forbid Greg Crumpton ends up on page 2 of Google. Nobody belongs there. That's like mortar. No one belongs on page 2 of Google, right? You need to find your stuff on page 1. But I'm being facetious, but that's how we've been doing data for a very, very long time. Ask a question, here's a blue link, you do the rest. Well, today, that's fundamentally changed, right? If all of you, in fact, I'm going to challenge you. Every single person listening to this has most likely used Google or Bing in the past 24 hours. That means that every single one of you has become a user of generative AI. Because when you use those search engines right now, the first response is no longer a blue link. It's a generative AI response. Okay. And that is something that we've never, ever, ever seen happened to us. So it took 5 days for ChatGPT to hit 1 million users, about a month for them to hit 100 million. And after about 9 to 10 months, they were about 1 billion unique users. There's only one application that was capable of hitting 1 million users after 1 hour. And I'll tell you what that application is. And some of you might be like, what? It was Threads. If you remember Instagram's attempt at the Twitter takeover, Threads came out there. People were like, this is so cool, for like an hour. And then afterwards, they're like, I'm good. All right. Back to ChatGPT, right? Whereas if I ask that same question of ChatGPT, almost everyone will raise their hands. So that was a very long introduction to your question, because what I want everyone to understand is that we're experiencing a shift in how we interact with data. For the first time in humanity, for the first time ever, we're asking data a question and getting a conscious answer back. I'm using that word very carefully, right? I'm not talking about this sentient being, but we're getting a conscious answer back. That's huge, everybody. Please understand, this isn't just some guy who's caffeinated, right? Actually, I've switched to tea now. We've changed the way we ask and interact with data. And this is the foundational time where all of this is happening. Now, the fact that this is happening in the near future might mean that we're working with a new iteration of GPT, some new architectural models around AI. But the fact of the matter is, we're a year into this, and none of this is slowing down. So to answer your question initially, what happens to legacy data centers? Look, there's going to be an evolution in this space, right? We're going to see more solutions that are going to be built around sustainability, working with less water, closed loop systems that have very little impact on local community watersheds. You know, obviously, you know, ways where we can sustainably create these architectures. The one of the big challenges that we need to work around is something that we were founded on: AI ethics, AI transparency, and AI sustainability. Those are the core foundational elements of my organization. And a lot of it's being transferred to other organizations as well, and other ideas and concepts of how to adopt these technologies. So from a physical perspective, again, the challenge, and this is from the latest AFCOM State of the Data Center report, our industry operates about 8 to 10 kW a rack. You can't work with artificial intelligence if that's your density. Just to give everybody perspective, right? Because we're talking about AI, we don't have a way to conceptualize it. A DGX node from NVIDIA, right? The green mean machine of H100s. These are the Ferraris, right? Of the GPU space. One of those units is 6U, right? 6U, and it slides into a 42-unit rack, right? A 6U unit of just one of those DGX H100 nodes, and there's 8 cards in there, will consume anywhere between 10.5 to 12 kW a rack. Just one. So what are you supposed to do? Put one in there and a whole bunch of blinking panels? That's not going to look very good, and it's a horrible use of space. So you need to advance your architecture to support some of these most modern workloads. So that being said, we've been heavily involved in working with data center organizations that are hundreds of thousands of square feet in space, including smaller ones as well, 10, 20,000 square feet of space. And as long as you have a good foundation, you know, good control, good containment, you have an extraordinary capability of moving into that more modern type of architecture. Now, we work with countless partners right now, physical data center spaces that are stuck in that 10.5, 11, 12 kW range. And really all they need is a few sensors to understand where they have hot, cold spots, a little bit of improved containment, a re-architecture, a hybrid environment of a good air-cooled system, a good rear door heat exchanger architecture. And if you want to double dip, I use that, you know, there's my pun. You could do direct-to-chip liquid cooling alongside a rear door heat exchanger, and you can really create some advanced architecture with your very traditional standard racks that can now range from 42 units all the way to 60 U. So you can really use that vertical space very, very intelligently. The point is, you can get creative. You can get very creative in how you do not need to go out there and put in a giant immersion pod, which I think are very cool as well, because that's not the only way you can enter this game of artificial intelligence. So we've been working with a lot of the legacy organizations, data centers, but there's a specific reason. It's because their customers have gone to them and said, we are motivated to move from the cloud. We want to have a part of our infrastructure with you, because we already have our exchange servers with you, our storage environment, our core critical pieces of infrastructure. So all you have to do is put a little bit of extra, right, GPU capacity. And again, this is where Neuro comes in as that platform to enable these organizations, how you become a part of this game and impact a customer base that's really, really willing to move. So there's good news here right now. That being said, if you have a raised floor environment that's got, like, you know, a rack spacing between each of your you know, racks, and you have no idea what's underneath the floor of your raised floor, and you're like, we haven't looked under there in 15 years, just ignore it. That's going to be a problem, right? We're going to have to talk about some re-architecting, some data center ninja-ing to bring you up to par to make it, you know, work a little bit more successfully. But I'll give you a great example. We've got a partner out in Lafayette, Indiana, WinTech. And I'm hoping that by this time, our conversation has evolved even more. But what an extraordinary use case. Great local market, secondary, a lot of capacity, a lot of power, really good green resources, and a local community that supports them. They don't have to be deployed in Northern Virginia. And what we found at those secondary, tertiary markets are prime. Oh my gosh, they're prime for, you know, creating GPU farms and accessing this really hungry market. Heck, it's part of the reason why I went to New Zealand as an emerging market. And I'm going to be out in Australia as well, in Sydney, in September of 2024, talking about these very same concepts of where you can build these powerful AI architectures, sometimes in very remote spots. So legacy to modern is happening right now. And here's where who's benefiting the most. It's the retail facilities, retail co-location facilities, because the larger hyperscale co-locations are kind of stuck. Here, let me explain why. Their primary customers are Amazon and Microsoft and GCP. So while they can support the market, they can't necessarily participate in it, which means they can't deploy their own services. They can't deploy their own GPUs. They always have to do it for somebody else. Whereas like a retail data center, like our partners, that's where they put a little bit of GPU space. They put Neuro on top. They put their logo on there. And they're like, hey, guess what we are? We're an AI company now. And that's how that level of modernization happens very quickly.
I love what you said about the hybrid model. I'm a huge fan of a little bit of this, a little bit of that in your existing space. I think that totally makes sense. You touched on one thing, Bill, that I find really interesting. I've been following a company, DC Blocks, and where they're building. And, you know, they're definitely looking at tier two cities. They are laying a big old fat pipe from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, across the Southeast, pretty much. How visionary do you have to be to start thinking about tier three markets? Or are we so early in tier two that's premature? Or should we start thinking? And I was reading a piece this morning about the quantum loophole deal up in Northern Virginia with the generator issue with the county. They proposed 260 semi generator, Align did. And they put them on hold because they start to become a power generator at that point instead of looking at each generator individually. I'm sitting in a position of having to think through, all right, we're brand new at the AI game as far as local usage, or common usage, maybe is a better word. We're starting to think about what's next, tier two cities and different architecture of how to get there. is it too early to think about what's next? And do we have dark fiber going to places we think we might want it? You know, what are your thoughts on that? Kind of looking ahead. I know we're looking ahead already, but now we're like, if you've got to make a 10-year investment in land, what do you start thinking about?
It's a great question. I think a lot of the focus right now is obviously on artificial intelligence and how do I support that market ultimately. It's funny you mentioned DC blocks. Heck, who knows, by the time, you know, we release this podcast, I'll be able to, you know, alongside of it, have a really much more fun announcement that I can talk to right now. But that's one of my targets, for example, for Neuro, right? And I'm just going to give you an example of DC blocks.
This is just me looking at my market.
No. It's folks like Element Critical, for example. You know, my partners at Scott Data Centers, another one there in Omaha, Nebraska. Wintech is in Lafayette, Indiana. Talk about tier two, tier three markets. Let's focus on that for a second. But for someone like DC Blocks, whose customers are largely retail, right? They have some other kinds of customers as well. They have this extraordinary opportunity. This is, again, where we come in. They put in GPU space. They put Neuro on top. They put their logo, it becomes DC Blocks AI, and all of a sudden, literally, they continue to do what they're amazing at, which is selling space, capacity, and power in emerging markets, but all of a sudden, they become an AI company as well through our support, where they don't have to do anything other than, again, put that platform on there and service their customers. Now, they have a very hungry customer base, obviously, that right now has quite a bit of that workload in Amazon and wants to move it on-prem. Let's talk about the market specifically, right? It's been fascinating to us to see how a lot of our traction has been coming from tier two and tier three markets. When we flew out to New Zealand to talk to them, it was very quickly that Datacom and Spark NZ came to us as data center organizations like, Bill, we love this AI chat. How can we become a part of it? How can we be relevant? And their concern was latency, right? So between Auckland, New Zealand, and mainland Australia, I think the ping time is like 32 milliseconds. That's not a little bit. It's not a little bit, especially for latency sensitive applications. But a lot of AI work that we've been doing is not latency sensitive, right? Imagine for a second, you go to New Zealand, you build a facility, high density, very clean power, energy, low cost per kilowatt, and you create a GPU farm. Right. In those situations, you just need the data to sit there for a long time to train it. And then ultimately, you can send bits and pieces back. The idea behind large language models and AI training is that you don't want to speed the process too much. You want the data to be accurate. You want it to be low bias, high accuracy. You want to make sure that this information is well trained to make sure that you're not creating hallucinations when you ask a question, that the data output that you're creating is very, very accurate. Now, the ramifications of improper data is even more impactful if you're like healthcare or financial services or science and resources or pharmaceuticals, right? So you have to make sure that you're training that data to its fullest capacity. You know, there's one time we were asked to do a proof of concepts for an automotive company. They gave us a week, Bill, we want you to create this really cool platform and we're going to give you a week to train this little bit of data. And it was garbage. It was horrible. Like that you asked the same question of the model and it would give you two different answers every other time. And one of them could be completely non-coherent. And that's because we never had a chance to train that model properly. So it's not about getting the data out there fast. It's about getting the data out there accurately. So these second tier, these third tier markets are very much emerging spaces because you can go out there, create these great data pools, these architectures to farm, access, and work with GPU architectures support artificial intelligence, large, medium, small language models, and everything sort of in between, as well as legacy AI as well. So one of the most interesting things that we've been seeing are some of our biggest partners have come from tier two and even tier three markets. As long as there's some decent connectivity there, again, part of the reason why we're going to Sydney, Australia, and New Zealand to talk about how those areas may very well be emerging markets as well. So, you know, you mentioned the whole generators thing and Prince William County and London and all that. And I've been in a part of a lot of debates, a lot of conversations with people holding the picket signs as well. And they've had a lot of really good concerns out there. We certainly need to become a better part of the community, but there's been so much incredible work being done to make sure that these data centers are no longer being built as these nondescript remote facilities, but rather being a part of the community directly. This was a very long-winded way of me answering this. The secondary and the third tier markets are going to become much more laser focused for a lot of these organizations to try and enter the data center market, especially in the focus of AI. Let me give you one very specific statistic. According to Jones Lang LaSalle, JLL, as well as a DC Byte, as a really good research company that I've been working with, if I'm not mistaken, when this podcast is going to be released, the wholesale availability in Northern Virginia of data centers is going to be 0%. It's going to be no availability. So what choice do you have? You have to look at these other markets to deploy into.
I think last week I looked at a piece of property up there that's going to house 456 megawatt data centers, seven buildings, but you don't build that overnight. It takes time. So we have to be able to have places for people to go in the interim. I don't know. It's just really interesting to me. I love the realism, a structure, a facility, and all the infrastructure it takes to make it happen. But we have to keep this thing growing while all of this is happening. And it's like, it's just a great time. I love being in the industry right now. There's so many cool things going on. So many cool people that, you know, we get to interact with and work with. It's a fabulous time. I'm thrilled I get to be around and participate in it. I had a flashback a while ago when you said Cisco gear and containment. I remember the side draft 3600 Cisco's blowing hot air into their neighbor in the telecom space. And I remember making hot aisle containment specifically for that 3600 where we could get that hot air out of that rack in a sideways configuration before you could buy it. We were making it out of plexiglass. So, I mean, that's how fun it was back then, you know, when people were running. It was a little bit like the Wild West, and I picture you with your black DIC hat on that I saw recently with your cowboy hat. So just really, really good stuff. So let's transition. We start to head toward the top of the hour, away from technology and more toward the people. You mentioned Peter Gross, who is an industry legend, as being one of your mentors. Who are some of the other people that you look at that have either helped you along the way or really brought foundational worthwhileness, I guess, for lack of a better word, to the industry? Who are some of those folks for you?
I'm going to try and rattle this off from the top of my head. And if there's anybody I forgot and you're listening to this, it's not intentional. It's because there were no rehearsed questions. Literally, Gabriella and Greg's like, here's the time. You're going to record this. Bill, you're going to be there. And it's a Monday. We don't need a script. So Peter Gross is definitely one of those people. Nancy Novak from Compass, Missy Young from Switch, Eddie Shooter, formerly of Switch as well. Amy Marks, she taught me a lot about prefab. That lady's
the modular queen.
Yeah. Carrie Getz, who I always enjoy working with. She's an extraordinary people person and has opened my purview of how to work with different types of groups of people, which I really appreciate.
Carrie's been on with us. Yep. She's an old friend. Yeah.
Yep. She's one of the people I try and look at. Rich Miller, founder of Data Center Knowledge and then Data Center Frontier, has been a huge mentor. And Kevin Romando from the publishing side as well. Those are the folks that run like Data Center Knowledge, Data Center Frontier. They got me introduced to AFCOM and Data Center World as well. Trying to see who else. There's one more individual who's been a huge mentor of mine who's not even in the industry. His name's Sean McCarthy. I'm actually having lunch with him tomorrow. He is the CEO of a manufacturing firm, Worldwide Fittings, and this dude gave this, I think I was like 25, 26 years old, the keys to the entire data center kingdom of his organization. And we're talking like, you know, several hundred million, 500 people, six locations in the United States, two in China, one in the UK. And I got to manage the entire technology infrastructure for all of that. It was an extraordinary lesson. And he taught me so much about learning the business. This guy made me get a forklift driver's license. He made me pick orders in the warehouse so that I could deeply and intimately understand the business before I could support the technology. Amazing industry, you know, just knowledge from that. Those, you know, at the highest level possible, I feel like I'm forgetting a few folks from the top of my head, but those are some of the real big individuals that I've seen as mentors, so folks that I sort of just like try and follow on the periphery, people that I can ping regularly and ask questions about. And there's people that are younger than myself as well, who I consider mentors, like Skylar Holloway, former Meta. I work with him at Switch as well. Valeria, who I work with at iMasons and Nomad Futurist, I think she's awesome because she's just like a go-getter and tries to go out there as well.
So did you say you broke up a little bit, Bill? I didn't hear the last name.
Oh, Valeria. She is the current co-chair of the iMasons Millennial and Gen Z Resource Group. When I stepped down from that, And so I had a chance to work with her, and she's younger than myself, and she's great. I get a chance to learn from her and what the up and coming, you know, generation requires to be successful in this industry. My God, that was just off the top of my head. And I know there's like at least a dozen more names that I want to talk about. Obviously, Peter Gross, we mentioned him as well. But these are individuals that I will unabashedly ask questions of, you know, where can I learn? Where can I become better? Where am I not good? And I'll tell you what, becoming a CEO of the company quickly made me understand all the things that I'm good at and all the things that I'm not good at as well, almost simultaneously, which is an extraordinarily humbling experience in having to go to people and ask for help. So, and Chris Crosby from Compass, he's another big, big friend and a mentor of mine. And he's a big supporter of fail fast and get up faster.
Well, I asked, I think more so, and all those people, you know, from, and I only know a handful of those personally, but the ones I do know are all open-minded. They love collaboration. They want to help the industry as well as help people. But what's really intriguing is the difference of the people that you talk about, you know, like what they do within the trade or within the industry that's different. And I think that's so helpful. The fellow who gave you the keys to the castle, I so much applaud him for giving you the instruction to go pick orders with a forklift, because if you don't know what everyone's struggle is, you can't solve the problem. And, you know, if you're picking orders and you've got this stupid app or a piece of software that you have to use that's crappy and you have to use it, there's no better judge than you of crappy software or application. So now you know the real struggle of what the common folks are out on the floor. And I think that's so important. So important.
Here it is. Here's one of the parts. You can see the logo on there. It says Worldwide Fittings right there. These are one of the fittings that these guys made, and I have it on my desk always. I've got a couple little things. Like these are things that I help pick, you know, from. You're right. You're right. Walk in a mile in the end user's shoes, and you'll understand why the CD-ROM doesn't work.
My job, I get to get out and go visit with our companies, and we've got 50 some odd companies around North America. And when I get to go get on a rooftop and hear and watch one of our technicians, a piece of software or an application that he's using or she's using for either diagnosis or for reporting, you get to see what works and what doesn't. And when you have to sign out and sign back in instead of using, you know, single sign-on, what are we doing? We're giving people 9 times the work when we don't have to. And you don't get that sitting in a damn cubicle. You have to go. You have to get out and go. And I just love that. But we're up on the hour. I feel like we could go for 3 more, but your tea may run out before we get there.
I don't know. It's a big mug.
I look forward to hearing us in the future talking about what's happening today that you can talk about in the future. So that's going to be fun when this gets released to hear what's new with you. But I value your friendship. You're a good dude. And I love when I get to see and talk a bit, but more so for what you're doing for the industry. You're helping a lot of people, even though they don't know it, through what you do every day. So thank you for that. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Greg. And for everybody listening out there, one piece of final something to think about for everybody, right? Find me online. I'm hoping after this gets released, my inbox and LinkedIn gets blown up. You can see the videos that I do for Intel, for Oracle, for all these really fun places. And you can see me wearing my cowboy hat in weird data center locations as well. Just remember one little thing, everybody. Vision without execution is just hallucination. So when you hear about all these crazy things, whether it's artificial intelligence, data, just all this stuff that might sound scary, learn about it, ask questions. You know, there's my Ted Lasso quote of the day, be curious, not judgmental. And I really challenge everybody here, again, to better understand this, not this shift in technology, but the shift in humanity, because it happens so quickly that you don't even realize it, right? Before you know it, right, we're running around with these really advanced cell phones in our pocket. We're just a little bit earlier, we didn't have any of this. I mean, it was June of 2007 when the first iPhone commercial came out. It was during the Oscars, and the commercial was simple as, hello. That's all they said. So the one thing that I want everyone to just think about is that technology moves at such an extraordinary pace. And right now, we've never had this pace to compare anything to. I know this sounds like an overcaffeinated, excited little chipmunk telling you this, but this is your moment to at least understand this market, understand your influence in this, whether you're an operator, person putting in HVAC gear, wiring, building, MEP, whatever the case is that you're listening to this. I'm talking directly to you right now. Take a second to really understand how everything that we've discussed, generative AI, these solutions are going to impact your life, because they will. They will. Again, these solutions will become as prevalent as your regular applications that you use every single day. They're going to be backed by the technologies that we're discussing right now. And my challenge to you is have a vision. Have a vision against anything that can help you, and then execute on it.
Well, Bill, that's strong words, great advice for any number of things in life, but in particular, what we do with our digital world. So, well, Gabby, I'm still laughing at chipmunk because I'm thinking chip as in computer chips. So that's a good one, Bill. I'm gonna have to remember that one. So really do appreciate it. Gabby, why don't you kind of wrap us up, and we will head down the trail toward more chipmunks.
Yeah, absolutely. As Greg said, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today and telling us kind of about what you do and where your interests and passions lie. It's very clear from, you know, the moment you got on the call, you really are super passionate about what you do and what you explore when it comes to the world of data. So it was super interesting to hear about what your world looks like on a regular basis. And I'm really excited for this episode to release for everyone else who's listening to hear about some of the exciting changes that are going to be true by the time this episode releases and be announced and everything like that. Thank you again for joining us. And as for everyone else, thank you for listening to another episode of Straight Outta Crumpton. For more episodes like this, please subscribe to Apple or Spotify podcasts. And don't forget to check out gregcrumpton.com for all of your Greg Crumpton content.
This is Straight Outta Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.